from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now, here's your host for Chatterbox.
I'm your first host for Chatterbox Video Game Radio. I'm Alon.
And I'm your second host. I am, that's right, the ex-Fat Ara.
And I'm the, is it fourth host?
Fourth. That's how fourth the numbers host. Go, yes.
And my name's Rich.
Who's All the right. third host?
I don't know. Rich counts for two, maybe?
Nate Vig.
Because he's not the ex-Fat host. There were people before even Nate. Even before. Yeah. Were you around? Were you listening before Nate was around?
I think when I started listening, it was Vig.
I heard the show.
Is it Vig or is it Smart?
Goes back Vig. To the 1860s.
Nate Smart was the other dude.
Yeah, Nate Smart was.
Is that how long we've been on the air? 1842?
No.
I believe
Since
it.
The Pledge of Allegiance has been around?
So I was researching the Pledge of Allegiance before you got here, Rich. And,
Why?
Because I put it up on the forums that we're going to talk about later.
Because that's just what smart and interesting people do.
So anyway, so I was researching the Pledge of Allegiance, and some of you might not know this, but I was in the Boy Scouts when I was younger, like a lot of you.
I wasn't. They didn't allow Armenians
when
in Boy
I was
Scouts.
Like 13 or something. They would, because they're a very Christian group. So because they're Christian,
too
they
much
like
body
you to,
hair.
They require that you say the Pledge of Allegiance. Now, I was in for 3 years, and I never even became the rank Scout, which, by the way, is the entry rank that you get in your first week.
You mean there's like lower ranks?
There's just not having a rank, and you're supposed to become a scout after the first week. And I was there for 3 years, and I never did. And the reason was that I refused to say under God in the Pledge of Allegiance. But they didn't want to kick me out or anything. They weren't mean about it.
How old were you when you did this?
13-ish. 13, 15.
Nice.
Well, 13, 14, 15.
I'm really impressed. I wish I had that much gumption.
That is quite impressive.
I just said there's no real need to. Like, I'll say the thing without the under God. And then I research it today, and I find out that part was only added in, like, 54.
Oh, yeah.
Before then, there was no under God anyway.
Yeah, 1954. Yeah. So it was around for, like, 100 years, basically.
Yeah.
And before they decided to add under God.
We've only been adding the under
God
crap for 50 years.
Same thing with on the money, too. It wasn't.
Didn't the official original verbiage say something about like video games being awesome?
Yeah. No, it didn't.
Another thing, just on a side note, now that we're on this topic, I find interesting is that we're pledging allegiance to the flag.
That's right.
Not to the country itself, but the republic for which it stands. But it's to the flag. Like, does anybody not realize that? Like,
you best not make the flag angry.
And to the country.
Well, right. It's to the flag, which stands for the republic.
Says, pledge allegiance to the flag and
Look,
to the republic.
Everybody
it
knows.
It's just weird. That we,
it's silly that we would pledge allegiance to a piece of cloth.
No. Everybody knows that symbolism is an essential ingredient to indoctrinating masses of people. Come on.
Yeah, it's all psychology.
And just so everybody knows, the country is a representative republic, not a democracy. So I hate it when people say that, just to put that out there.
Well, yeah. They
this is a democracy, and it's not. It's not.
I agree.
So,
but most people do know that by now.
A lot of people don't. A lot of people think our country is a democracy, and it's blatantly not.
Okay, let's, just talk about politics for the whole hour. How about that?
Is there a game that takes you through politics?
I don't know. I was just like, I got to think of some hook about Gabe so that we can at least marginally stay on topic. But no, that's the best I could do.
It's
what games have you guys been playing?
You know what? I have to say something.
I've been subjected to Animal Crossing. I'll tell you that much.
No, actually, I want to ask you guys about this. Every once in a while, I get this feeling. It kind of goes in cycles, and it has a lot to do with the games that are around me at various times, where I'm... The games that I'm playing, I realize suddenly that they're nothing but redos of games I've played before, and I just get this sinking feeling like, man, I'm just playing the same S I was playing 5 years ago.
Yeah, that's why I have a hard time playing games these days. That's why I'm always looking for something new.
Yeah,
I don't want to play the same crap.
So check this out.
Like, yet you buy every racing game that hits the market.
Well, not everyone, just the good ones, right? But... You know, I'm playing Disgaea 3, and I'm just like, I played it for a couple hours, and I'm just like, wait a minute, like, this is just way too familiar.
Ooh, this is just like number 2, but when you were playing number 2, you didn't realize it was just like number 1.
Well, no, I mean, number 2 had enough new in it, and this one I don't think has enough new in it to give me that distinct experience.
Or the other games from Nippon Ichi, like Phantom Brave.
Yeah, let's not go into that.
But yeah,
so instead of playing it for 120 hours, you're going to put in, what, 30 hours?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm going to play it a lot less frequently, that's for sure. The other funny thing is I just started playing Forza 2, which, as you guys know, I've been dogging on Forza 2 at every opportunity, and I really shocked myself.
How is it that it took you a year to join the party? That's what I don't understand. Like, well, I didn't like Forza 2 a long time ago.
I had no interest in it, but then once I found out I could spend about $10 and get it, I was like, well, okay, why not, right?
Oh, well, that's fair, I guess.
And it was actually not even $10. It was trading in a game through that Play Switch company, you know? So it was even not even using real currency did I obtain this new game. But I started playing it. I was actually shocked for the first off because I actually liked it. And not because it's a video game, but the only reason why I like it is because I like racing as an activity, period. Right? It's so unforgiving and it's so realistic in terms of its simulation that unless you really, really actually like the mechanics of racing, you're not going to get anywhere, have any interest in it, I think. But anyway, I'm looking at this and I'm just shocked to myself. I'm like, wow, I didn't really appreciate up till now what kind of enormous ripoff of Gran Turismo this game is.
Yeah, you were telling me about that last week, but I'm not understanding why you were surprised by that. Like, we all knew it was the same game. And
well, I kind of knew. It's just the only way I can explain it is that it's just something I gained a new level of appreciation for that fact, right? I mean, like, you can understand some things on an intellectual level.
Is it just
sometimes
that it's such a simulation, or
No, it's the structure of, oh, you know, I have to get first to get a car from a race, and then I'm amassing just this ridiculous inventory of cars, 80% of which I'll never drive. And the shop system and basically just like the structure of the career. I mean, they do some interesting things like, oh, okay, there's like, you know, there's levels, right? So your car has a level and then your character has like a level, so you gain experience points and stuff, and that's kind of cool. But yeah, what's up, Rich?
Side note, not anything to do with the game you're talking about, but Burnout Revenge, Burnout Paradise.
Yeah.
They're patching it. They're adding race restarts, which is yay.
So I'm just curious. Do we have a engineer tonight? Did he get sacked?
Yeah, we're getting strobe lighted over
what's
here.
What's going
somebody
on?
Colin? Yeah. What's the deal?
Did someone quit and not tell
you? Yeah, the phone's been ringing for about 3 minutes with nobody picking up. Yeah,
so is that Ron or?
So if you're calling, just keep calling because apparently our engineer's been sacked. I don't know. Maybe he'll come back later on this week.
He disappeared.
Maybe. But
they play this audio throughout the building, so maybe he'll hear us talking about it.
All right.
There he is.
That's fantastic.
Okay, all right, so
our ever diligent engineer,
Rich. I don't think it is Ron, but we are going to have Ron on later.
Yeah.
So I'll mention that to people up front. We'll tease it. Ron Workman, who was here the week you were not here, but he was on the phone.
He's the reason Alon decided to go with Vegas.
That's a nice. I wish I had that last name because then everybody thinks that you're, you know, really like you work a lot and you're a hard worker.
Yeah. No. So the person on the phone is actually another listener from way back who's calling in, but cool. Ron's going to be on later on the show, and he's an analyst and all around smart guy and crazy dude
and a hard worker perhaps
maybe. And so he wrote recently on his blog about how Take-Two is pretty much in, well, a word what? I can't use here
in it's, the in it's the S-er?
It's falling. Yes, that's what I wanted to say. Right. So and he'll help us understand why.
Unlike 13 other companies?
Well, every other company is, but he has some interesting insights. We'll have him on, and
I'd like to hear that.
We'll talk about that. We also want to talk perhaps about you want to talk about what Pen15 wrote to us, the fighting game design?
Yeah, he gave us a good topic, so we're going to talk about Pen's topic. If you guys ever have topics that you think are good, you can email us, and if we agree, then we'll talk about it, and if we don't, you'll never hear about it.
Exactly. And the website, chatterboxgameshow.com, has a link to our email, so send us there. Send us an email with stuff you want us to talk about. So things that we didn't cover from last week that we meant to get to. Let me pull up my little file here.
We use high technology here at Chatterbox.
Definitely.
Video game radio.
So there's that Forbes article about Kotick.
That's right, about how we'll just reveal it when we talk about it, won't we?
Well, we can do that now. Also, there are some other things. I don't know if we'll get time to cover all this stuff, but so there's that. There's also Kotaku had, like, I don't know about heads, but executives at Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo write letters to, like, hypothetical letters to new owners of their video game systems. And I thought there was some interesting insight to be found from those letters. I mentioned it last week, but we didn't actually cover it. So that's another thing. And then fighting game design, and then Ron Workman. We've got all these things. So
it's a big show.
I guess, real quick.
Big, exciting show.
We've got a few seconds before the end of the break. I thought we had a few seconds.
One second, really. Maybe three.
All right. So we don't have to talk about Forza when we come back, 12. Right?
No, please. That's fine.
All right. Cool. We'll be back. Talk about some more stuff. Thanks.
Arizona's News Talk Leader, KFNX, AM 1100.
Welcome back, guys. This is Chatterbox, video game radio, where we talk about Forza 2 all the time, 24 hours a day.
It's an unfortunate reality, but when a racing game comes out, we apparently talk about that for at least one segment.
Well, I do. Good ones. Notice how I haven't spent really any time talking about Burnout.
Well, I appreciate that. So after I mention our sponsor, UAT, that is the University of Advancing Technology, and they have a website at uat.edu, a place you can learn about becoming a game designer and programmer and all that stuff. We're going to go take this phone call because we want to get to Ron next segment. Right. So we've got John on the line from Las Vegas, if I'm correct.
Ooh, party town.
John, yes.
You're on the Chatterbox.
How did you know?
How did I know that it was you calling?
How did you know I was from Las Vegas?
Oh, because I know who you are. So, they tell me this stuff, man.
Alon prides himself on getting covert information.
Yeah, you could tell Norm, like, John from Paris, and he would put it on the... it would say that. So
we just know. That's
from Paris. I'd be like, from Paris, Texas? Anyway, I know I talked to you outside of the show at some point. You said you wanted to talk about a certain topic that I'll let you reveal, unless it's something else that you wanted to discuss tonight.
Oh, no. It's that certain lovely, coveted game that you so adore.
All right.
I think it's a piece of complete garbage, actually.
I'm going to give you 3 minutes. Lay it on us.
Wait, what? Is it Bubsy 3D?
Should I just leave the room? Like, I'm going to die.
I wouldn't object to that.
I think Super Mario 64 is quite possibly the second worst game made for the Nintendo 64 system.
Okay. Now,
the most retarded thing I've ever heard in my life.
Turn his mic off, because I want to have a rational discussion here. I don't know if I would go that far, because I know that Superman is the worst.
Well, I said second worst, right?
And I know that there's got to be a game that's worse than that and better than Superman. But I'll let you do your diatribe. Go ahead.
Well, I'll lay down my objections to the game. One, it has terrible controls, even for its time, which Alon will disagree with me, but I have many instances where I will press one direction, and then Mario will start to walk the other direction, and then go the direction I pressed.
Do we have a ding sound effect? Do we have a ding sound effect?
No. It's not true.
It's true.
It's totally true. And often cases, you'll be near an edge, so Mario will just casually walk right off the edge before he decides to turn around
I've fallen so many times off that ridiculous mesh that you have to grab on.
Secondly, you will often be on a moving platform. If you're on a moving platform and then jump towards anything else, Mario will bump his head and sit there for about a second and a half before he gets up. So chances are the moving platform you're on is just going to slide under you and you will fall to your death. So that's more of a game design issue. But why isn't that wall just spikes so I know if I touch this wall, I will die? Because you do if you touch that wall. There are many instances of that sort of thing. The camera angles I'm willing to forgive because it's an old game and it was one of the first 3D games.
I was hoping for the other buzzer.
You guessed correctly, the ding, Norm.
I guess I shouldn't have said the word buzzer, huh?
You said ding.
Probably. Oh, did I say it right?
You said ding.
Okay, good.
The ding, 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 ding. All right.
We
should get the sound effect sorted before the show, though. So here's the thing, John. You're wrong about all those things, which is unfortunate.
No. But he's.
I liked you until
this
now.
This game has done crazy things to me.
I think he's just bad at the game, and this is coming from the guy that plays games on easy.
I'm I'm the biggest proponent of control in a game, and it's necessary to have good control, except this game does have good control. And if you're facing one direction and then and stop and then press in a different direction, he will walk a little bit before he goes.
He walks around. He doesn't instantly
turn around.
Exactly, because he has to turn around. But it's not like in Resident Evil or in Tomb Raider, the turnaround. Like,
no, but it's see here, let me contrast it to like Zelda. If you press lightly, that's when Mario is most likely to walk the same direction he was going. Whereas in like Legend of Zelda, that's the time that they realize, oh, it's most crucial that this person doesn't want to go the direction they were going, and they want to slowly turn around the other way. Whereas if you go full bore, like in Zelda, he'll do that sort of run around, turn around to make it look more natural and smooth.
I have to say that John is correct.
That's fine, but that doesn't make the game unplayable at all.
No. I'm making a case here. And I'll bring up the last good point, since my last big point, since you're kind of rushed here, is that they don't the game does not tell you, oh, you can't get this yet. Like, there are many times where I will go for a secret coin by trying to collect one of many things, like you have the 8 coins you have to collect, or you have different little tasks you can accomplish, and you don't know yet that you can't get them. So as you're going through the same level 6 times, which is also a big problem in the game design, in my opinion, is you're doing basically the same thing with a very slight variation over and over and over to get all the stars.
Okay, let me explain why this is unnecessary.
I'm not even...
All right, so for those who aren't familiar, and you should be because this is the best game ever made, there are all these different worlds. Yeah, there are all these
Better
different
than
worlds.
Resident Evil 4.
All right, I'm going to say the same thing for the 4th time in a row, and no one's going to interrupt me this time. There are several different worlds you play in the game, and each world has 6 coins or stars that you're supposed to get in the game. And then there are additional – is it star? It's a star, right? There's additional stars that you get by doing other things. So, for instance, there might be task A, B, C, D, E, and F, but there's also get all 8 red coins, which is always an additional star, or get 100 yellow coins in the game, which is always another star in that world. So in each world, you can get at least 8 stars, and I think exactly 8 stars. I might be wrong. It's been a long time. But there are some times when, like, for instance, the first level you go to, you can't get the 8 red coins because one of them is in the middle of the sky, and you can't get there until you've done something else, which makes the cannons that let you fly through the air appear, right? So in the first world, you can't get the 8th red coin because you need the cannons, and the cannons aren't available. But that's an extra thing. Like, you're on world 1A, and you're trying to do 1A task. There might be some other tasks you could do. Like, you could maybe complete 1B, depending on the world, right? But you're on 1A. So if you can, great. But if you can't, it doesn't matter, because you're assigned to 1A. And if you're doing the red coin collection, then okay, you can't get it on all of them, but it's one of the extra goals in the game. It's not the main goal of that particular level you're playing.
Alan is right on this one.
Yeah. So it shouldn't matter, as long as you can get it at some point. And that's part of it. It's figuring out which configuration of this world can I play in order to achieve this goal. And if it were something you had to do and you were faced with the task and then couldn't do it, that would bother me. Like, if you could play the 6th part of the level before playing the 2nd, then it would be bad news. Anyway,
I think we should do a McLaughlin group format. I'm going to work on just developing that segment.
30 seconds.
Yes. What do you think? Just going to tell everyone that they're wrong and what the correct answer is after 2 minutes of discussion.
All right, so
I will listen to that radio show.
I'll remind everybody: Super Mario 64, greatest game ever made. You can play it on the Wii.
Wrong.
Rich likes Ocarina of Time.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, you can play it on the Wii by downloading it. You can play it on the Nintendo 64, or if you feel like emulating it with some other system, feel
free. You
can
play it on the DS as well, but it's not as good.
Oh no, yeah, you can't. The control is not real
control
for that game.
You can use the D-pad, but you need the control stick.
Yeah, you definitely need the analog, and playing it on the video screen that you're looking at,
yeah,
doesn't cut it. So don't play it on the DS. But played on the other systems, and now I'm going to go. So I appreciate the call, John. Really do. Really,
very well.
Really do. But I don't agree. All right, you somehow do.
So what?
You were right on one, he was right on the other. I call that a stalemate.
Okay, fine.
He was wrong on his very first comment. I just want to make sure everybody realizes this.
That's cool. So let's get to fighting game design.
All right. So I'm really hoping that Penn will call in, because I'm sure that he has an opinion on this.
I don't think we have time for another phone call before the end of the...
Yeah.
So let me pull up the email that we got from Penn, right?
Well, you don't even need to do that, because, you know, being such a good host, I've memorized everything I need to know.
You've prepared.
It's very simple conceptually.
Actually, I've just written it down, and I'm going to pretend I memorized it. That's the beauty of radio.
All right, take it away.
But so basically, Penn was wondering, you know, what do we think about the kind of like different schools of fighting game design, right? And what he was kind of postulating was that, you know, games like Soul Calibur have, you know, what he calls kind of like this new school of game. Fighting game design, where most of the moves are pretty simple, right? Like you know, you can hold right and or press right and then press like Y plus B or something like that, right? Or like
in other words, something that's not terribly complicated to perform.
Right, like hold a direction, press a button, and so on, right? And he was contrasting this with, you know, how Street Fighter does it, which I don't know. He was basically framing this in terms of old and new. Like Street Fighter is old, you have to do this complex movement and then a button.
But his argument is made with outlier examples.
Here's the thing that I'm kind of stuck on is that, you know, I wouldn't really categorize them as new and old. I mean, Street Fighter seems, except for like, I don't know, maybe Killer Instinct, which pretty much lifted that type of move mechanic, there aren't a lot of games that I wouldn't really like singularly frame it as being old and new. I mean, there's kind of like two ways to do it, right?
I mean, I do kind of agree with him, but he's looking at it from this from the standpoint of, you know, what games are new? It's Tekken and Soul Calibur. And what games are old? Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat, every Neo Geo fighting game ever.
Okay,
made.
Well, you know, suppose that we just go along that, right? It's interesting because, you know, well, the simpler schemes obviously are more accessible, right? In terms of, well, it's just easier to do the moves. And so it's easier to get some satisfaction out of pounding on the buttons. But at the same time, you kind of miss something important, which is, you know, in, you know, the Street Fighter style of designing moves, you know, because it's intrinsically harder to pull them off, there's a lot greater chance that, okay, well, you know, you might try to do a move and fail. And so your actual, like, ability to actually execute the move physically has some difficulty associated with it now.
That's the thing. It's two different intentions. If you talk to anyone who is a serious Street Fighter player or someone involved in the development of the product, you realize that their game is designed to be intentional. Everything you do, you mean to do. Tekken and Soul Calibur, people can be button mashers and do all this crazy stuff and look cool because the developers just want it to look cool because it's great animation.
Well, yeah.
Street Fighter's different.
I guess.
I want to expand
degree.
On this, but we'll have to wait till the end of the show. We're going to break. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's number one. Woohoo!
That's right, we're back at Chatterbox Video Game Radio. We've scheduled to have Ron Workman on the show right now. He hasn't called in quite yet, hopefully we'll in a minute. Oh, looks like he's there now. Coming in. So, like we said, he wrote recently on his blog about how Take-Two is taking a total dump. And, of course, every company is taking a complete dump.
Yeah, right? Especially like Midway, total dump.
Well, they're completely gone, right?
Yeah.
I thought that they were like making like another Mortal Kombat game.
I heard
something.
That. Like the guy was like, "Oh, we're gonna make another Mortal Kombat game."
There's always room for another Mortal Kombat.
Didn't you guys go bankrupt and like you're gone now?
No worries.
All right, well,
no matter.
Let's welcome Ron to the show. Ron, you're on the air.
Okay. Now am I sounding okay?
Yeah, you sound wonderful.
Sound terrible, Ron.
Hey, what's up, Ron?
Whatever, Ted.
I think for the first time in the history of the show, or at least of the last 2 years, we have someone from a landline, which is fantastic.
This is, yes, your
I
fidelity
can call
is
from a
excellent.
If you want.
I thought you were on one.
No, I actually used a special little, because, you know, I do a lot of radio shows and stuff like that, and I try to make sure I got a good mic if I'm on a phone, so I never use the actual phone.
You know, your deep, sultry voice comes across quite well.
I know. I'm quite dirty worded.
So let's get down to it. Ron, you've got, do you want me to mention your Tumblr? Or?
Never heard of it.
Yeah. Okay. Ron Workman.
Yeah. I'm like, what is that?
RonWorkman.tumblr.com. If you don't know how to spell Tumblr, you probably don't know what it is.
T-U-M-B-L-R.
That's
just
right.
Just like I would spell it normally, actually.
So not like the Batman Tumblr, I'm assuming.
No.
No. All right. And so one of the posts you made recently was called Take Two is About to Implode, COO Steps Down. So you have sort of this history for predicting things in advance. You're actually kind of an analyst. So tell us about the history of your thoughts on Take Two and what you put in your blog post here.
Well, one of the things a lot of – like when you go in, you need to have the mindset and realize that a lot of people listening, you know, I'm sure they remember – EA wanted to buy Take-Two out, like last, what was it, June-ish? I mean, well, hell, it went from like May through August or something. It was pretty drawn out.
I remember one of the deadlines was in April, yeah.
Yeah, in the video game world, it was pretty big news. And what happened was around, I think, March of 08, Take-Two stock, if you look back at it, the ticker is TTWO. But if you look back around March, if I remember correctly, it had like a 10-point jump. It just went through the roof. And the stock was legitimately worth like $10 a share or whatever. Maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less. It's arguable. But it jumped up to like $27. And EA made them an offer of $26 per share, which basically says, hey, we're giving you a hell of a lot more than what your company's technically worth. It's a billion-dollar company, but...
but they were offering less than the current price.
Well, no, that was the thing. When the rumors and the speculation started, the price went through the roof on Take-Two. So Take-Two was overvalued as can be. After, I think it was right after EA made the offer, the stock went up to like $27, $27.50 or something like that, I think it peaked out at. But so Take-Two had this value that even though you got a game coming out with Grand Theft Auto 4, this is before it came out, even though you got a game that it's legitimately going to make, you know, $500 million to, it's easily a $1 billion franchise. You also have to take into consideration the $100 million of debt you took on to make the game. And like, that's not an official number. They've never actually specifically said what the official number is. And the say $20-30 million marketing campaign and all the stuff you got to do, like you're paying on that debt, you're paying interest on the money that you went in. You know, your company had to have that money to go in and make this game that they've been working on 3-4 years. So you have to backpack whatever you make. You know, you got to say, hey, we're in $200 million on this project. Granted, they made $500 million in the first week, but they got to backpay that, so they owe that. And EA made them a healthy offer, and I think it was just bad timing. I think if EA would have waited till after GTA, you know, came out like a month or two after, they'd obviously got Take-Two at a cheaper price, and the sale might have went through. And,
yeah, but they wanted all the money from Grand Theft Auto 4. So
pretty
the only way to make it worthwhile was to have it beforehand, right?
It seemed to me like they were trying to like get the tender offer in before the game came out, almost.
Pretty much.
I never exactly understood why, but...
Well, and like one of the things I predicted was I was dead nuts on the sales in the U.S. of GTA 4, and believe it or not, the sales of GTA 4 were really hard to predict. I mean, I know everybody listening is like, oh, big, you know, no surprise, GTA is going to sell a ton because look at GTA 3 and you know, with San Andreas, they're some of the biggest selling games of all time by a pretty good margin, and. So everybody, we knew it was going to sell a lot, but it was really hard to predict the actual scale of how it was going to sell because, you know, the PS2's got 70 million units or so out there, and GTA 4's not coming out for it. So all we have is new blood in the PS3 and the 360. And we knew the 360 version was probably going to sell 2-1 over the PS3 version because of the DLC. But it was really hard to predict exactly how big it was, and I don't think people do a good job at measuring. Like GTA 4 crushed Halo, if it gives you perspective, you know. And I know Halo is a single console game, but it's massive. You know, it is massive in the Halo universe, and GTA 4 can just step on that. So you know you got a big franchise. You know you got BioShock, which is a big franchise, and you've got some stuff worth money in Take-Two, and that's why you got, you know, Rockstar, 2K, Marin, 2K Boston. These companies are worth some money, and EA wanted to take them over. And I'm one of the few people that likes what EA is trying to do. I think they're trying to really make great games and do some good stuff. And there's a big misconception about when a company buys somebody out, you know, they stick their paws in and screw with it. Not really. It doesn't work like that. It's the same people that were making the same game, doing the exact same thing, but usually it means they have a better budget and more marketing. You know? Nobody at EA comes down in a suit and says, get this game out the door right now. It just... That's like almost like a movie mystery type of thing.
Is that not... more Ubisoft style?
Well, no, I didn't say every company doesn't do that. I'm just saying EA in particular doesn't do that. And usually, I do know of situations where companies have done things like that. Yes, I will say that. But, you know, they come in, they buy the company, and you know, the people at Rockstar, the team at Rockstar, you know, I know a few people there, and I was talking to them, and they're like, you know, we can't really care about this. We're just trying to make a video game right now. You know, that's all we need to focus on. That's what we need to do. It doesn't, and this is right in the heat of them, you know, a month or two before a game comes out, you're in crunch time, bug fixing and trying to get the game to gold to hit the deadline. And, so like, we just can't pay any attention to it. And it's, you know, it's tough because you're getting a lot of bad PR, and you got a PR team at Rockstar and at Take-Two or whatever that's working to build up PR and get this game out. And a lot of gaming sites are negative, and they just want to say, oh, you know, EA trying to buy out Take-Two. Take-Two says screw you. And it really wasn't like that. I mean, there was some things that can be considered bad blood, but not that bad. Okay, I don't even know why I'm going off on this tangent.
Yeah, I was about to try and get you back on track.
I'm going really deep here into like the history of Take-Two.
We've only got a couple minutes left. So what has changed recently? What happened recently to make you decide to, I don't know, that this thing is actually going under? Because your prediction is essentially that Take-Two's done for.
No, I'm not saying they're done. I think they're going to exist and they're going to float around. I'm just saying, like, 2 days after, I think, I made my post saying, you know, Take-Two's in kind of bad shape. You know,
is that how you put it, kind of in bad shape?
Well, I think they're about to implode. I don't mean they're gone away for good, but it's bad times where legitimately they'll probably have to break apart some of their company and sell it.
Take-Two owns so much that people don't even realize. Like, yeah. I can't even remember the labels right now, but they put out some absolute crap that – They use different labels for it so that nobody realizes it's part of Take-Two and it's not part of Rockstar. It's some other crappy little company.
And you know what? That's not uncommon at all.
No, even back in the NES days, Konami did that. They had like three different companies so that they could release more games on the NES. But like they specifically release crap, absolute crap, with some names that nobody even realizes are connected. And maybe it's more common than I realize.
What happened, you know, one of the things that prompted my post was the CEO, the chief operating officer of Take-Two, stepped down. And the irony of this whole thing is, like, if you look back over a period of 6 months, Take-Two 6 months ago was worth $26, $27 per share. Now it's worth $7.39 per share.
Ooh. Well, so admittedly, every stock in the market right now
dumped. That's true. But not to this degree, especially not gaming stocks.
Not 75%.
Yeah. So the day after I made my post, a writer, oh God, what's this clown shoe guy's name? Eric Krangle, right? He writes for Silicon Alley Insider. I'm not kidding you. This happened right after I made my post. This guy on CNN, you know, money.cnn.com, gaming winners and losers, Take-Two soars. I emailed the guy. I emailed his boss. I emailed the whole staff. And I'm like, you owe more to the people that read CNN.com than to put this crap out there. And I told him, I was like, I don't know how you can look at Take-Two as a good stock. You know, your chief operating officer steps down. Your stock's the worst shape it's been in well over a year. You know, it's absolutely tanked over the last 6 months. And here CNN is gloating about it, being a winner over the year.
Are they saying it's a value proposition because it's so low?
Well, it's technically up 25% year over year, but the stock itself isn't. It's hard to explain, but it is, but it isn't. But anyways, you don't own something when it's, you know, going like a fireball downhill. You don't, like, that's not the stock to buy. You wait till it levels out a little bit. And this clown shoes of Eric Krangle over at Silicon Alley Insider list their bestseller as carnival games for the Wii because, you know, that brings the kids in something hot. So, yeah, Carnival Games for the Wii, this guy's listed as their bestseller.
Wow.
I need it.
Yeah. I think Carnival Games might have sold, I don't know, 3 million copies, 2.9 million copies or something.
It actually did all right. It did.
Yeah, no, it did good. It did good, but like... Yeah,
it's not GTA 4.
Why would you not bring up GTA 4? I mean, GTA 4 did $500 million in a week. You know, it's like... Could he not see anything past the shadow of GTA 4? Was that the only thing with carnival games? Like, what? Jesus. I can't even... Anyways, the guy knows nothing.
All right.
And that's the danger of an analyst. But... Well, when you have big people stepping down, you've got to be careful, man. Top dogs are companies that are tanking. You got to watch it.
Well, we got to go to break, but would you be willing to stay on for the next segment, Ron?
Yeah, that's cool.
All right, stay with us. We'll be back.
Welcome back. It's Shatterbox Video Game Radio, and we are continuing to talk with the insurmountable Ron Workman.
That's right, and of course I'm going to remind everybody about UAT.edu, the University of Advancing Technology, and what they offer to you as a student wanting to become a video game aficionado. So one of the reasons I brought Ron onto the show tonight is because I'm fascinated by all this business talk. Because you guys all know, like,
I'm also fascinated by
how much money you've lost.
How much money I lose from day to day. Yes, fantastic.
Yeah, our own some take too. Let's step away from the topic now, because I wonder if we're alienating our listeners who don't care about the stock market.
Maybe they can get smarter, and then...
You know what, Alon?
Smarter listeners.
Yeah.
Let me say one thing. One of the biggest mistakes I've noticed is that when you discuss this stuff, When you say things like, I made a blog a while back and I said the PS3, I really think by the end of 2010, like the PS3 could be $200 to $250. Like I really, really do. There's rationale behind it.
It better be.
One of the mistakes that I think people make is they don't realize that as an analyst, and I'm not a speculative analyst, by the way, some people in the industry don't. Jim Sterling doesn't seem to know what that means.
Oh, snap.
I don't guess, all right? There's a reason that these things are accurate. And I hate to rag on Jim, but pretty funny. Anyways, heart has nothing to do with this. What you like has nothing to do with this. I just happen to be an analyst that's very passionate about gaming. So sometimes the thing I talk, sometimes – when I talk or when I write stuff, it's passion too. And that's one of my greatest mistakes is now and again I've ragged on like Sony fanboys and Nintendo fanboys and stuff like that. And that's my history of gaming. That's not business. So when you talk about things like Take-Two, people say, back before E3, I told quite a few people, I said Midway's going to be gone by the end of the year. And everybody thought I was crazy because people in the gaming industry have a tendency to think with their heart and with their love. And it has nothing to do with that. It's business models. And it's, Sumner Redstone had his daughter running Midway and like, she just dropped it and like quit. And it's like, God, never, ever invest in a company that's doing that. And everybody's like, oh, but they've got Mortal Kombat. And it's like, yeah, but their R&D and the money they paid for the Unreal Engine and blah, blah, blah. It doesn't balance out to becoming a profitable company. So when you, some of the things I talk about, people get confused. Take your heart out of the thing. Like if I say the Wii's going to fail, I'm not saying it because of anger, which the Wii's not going to fail. But like with the PS3, especially with what's going on in the economy and whatever right now, there's no doubt that a massive price drop is imminent. I mean, March, April, we're already looking at $50 and $100 off the thing.
Didn't I just read something that Amazon's already starting to give back $50 or something on the PS3 right now?
Yeah, well, or you can be smart and do that Sony card thing and get it for like $250 to $280.
That's a different story. That's not MSRP.
Yeah, I've seen that too. But like when I talk about this stuff, it has nothing. It's sales numbers. Like if you take the Wii sales over last year and divide it by two, and then divide that by two, it's still crushing the PS3. And people, their brain just doesn't want. They don't want to understand that. Sony has the most expensive console, and they're selling a half of a half of a half of what damn Wii's selling,
And that's one of the reasons we bring up business on the show so much, or at least I do, because the impassioned fanboys that are so much a part of our community, right, they'll write on blogs and they'll write on forums and everything, wondering why does the game fail at this? Or why wasn't it better here? Why don't they just, you know, stay behind doors and make the game better? Why don't they fix this aspect? And they don't realize that so many parts of the business responsibilities of these companies force them into either releasing too early or not putting enough people on the task or not putting the good people.
And often you have the Arrested Development Syndrome, that TV show that got canceled that everybody loves.
Yep.
It had a terrible marketing setup.
Fantastic
some
show.
Some games are really good, and then they just don't get good market value, and they don't sell. I mean, it's just, it's one of those type of things. And then that studio runs into less of a budget on the next game and a smaller time constraint. And they got to, you come to a point where you're like, okay, how many bugs can we accept? We need to get this game out on the market. Is it going to cost us more to hold it back and fix these bugs? Or will our users tolerate passionate a month down the road? You know? And it's a tough balancing act. I'm glad I'm not in the middle of that stuff, to be honest with you.
So one of the other things that I wanted to talk about that I mentioned last week as well was the recent article in Forbes covering Kotick and the Activision company and sort of the strange way that he didn't like games, but he seemed to take this games company into, you know, becoming the biggest company out there. Did you read that article at all?
I don't know how I feel about Bobby. Sometimes he's on it and sometimes he's not, and about a year ago, I started saying that EA was going to be a liked company and Activision was going to be a hated company over the next few years. But Activision's going to make money, you know? I get to a point where I feel like they're just milking the tar out of, the Guitar Hero franchise and blah, blah, blah. And now
DJ people hated
Hero and everything's going to be something Hero, and you know, we're looking at a country music Guitar Hero version.
Oh,
yeah. Don't tell me that doesn't make sense. There's more country music fans.
No, it makes absolute sense. As a business, it makes absolute sense. Take your heart out of it, invest in Activision over this stuff. I mean, they had 9% growth last year. They were down to 7.7 or something like that over the year. But still, they were actually technically down on stock. But it was a terrible year for the stock market. So they didn't really underperform. And they own some franchises that don't take a lot to make and are going to make money. So Activision is a business, yeah. As something you love, it's just, I think over the next year or two, it's going to be the company you hate more than anything. And EA is going to be a company that people start to like more than anything. They're going to fade that gorilla image.
EA has certainly made a lot of changes for the better, but one thing I liked in that article, it talked about how when Bobby would come in and buy a new company, he would, or buy some developer, right, and make him a part of Activision. They wouldn't be forcing a lot of things on these developers. He would put some marketing money behind it and some focus groups and things, and he would say, all right, here's some information for you, the developers. Here's what people liked and didn't like. You take that, you know, with a grain of salt. Do whatever you want. We're not going to force you to either implement this sort of change or whatever.
That's what should be done, man. Hey, do what you do good. I won't mess with it. Here's some money. Do what you do.
And that's the way he treated it. I thought that was great, and that's certainly not the impression I had of, you know, the evil EA from a few years ago. Now, I don't know how they really work because I'm not in the middle of EA, but I certainly got the impression that their accountants ran the show. Given that the only game I ever saw out of that company was Madden, 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 and every sports franchise that they made.
Oh, come on. I mean, they got Pandemic and BioWare and all those franchises.
The most recent game they put Pandemic on apparently sucked a lot of bad things.
Are you talking about Mercs 2?
I'm talking about Lord of the Rings Conquest, which everyone has said horrible things about.
Well, Lord of the Rings franchise has never had extremely good sales on consoles. I mean, I don't know.
I'm just wondering, are they misallocating their resources?
I mean, Mass Effect was good. I mean, obviously they were mostly done with that game when EA picked BioWare up, but their new game, the Dragon Age, looks freaking sweet.
Hey, Ted, last night,
Ted's our third ghost.
I don't know if this is out, but I don't even know if I could say this. But me and Joe Berling were at an event, and we were hanging out with the BioWare guys, and this has been months and months ago. Is there any gameplay footage of Dragon Age? Excessive? Because I seriously have a solid half-hour gameplay footage. And I forgot it. Here's the thing. I've had the tape, and I'm like, oh, my God, people will go nuts. And I know the guys at BioWare, so I didn't want to go screw them over at the time. And this is back in, August. And I've got the entire intro to the game, gameplay, all the stuff you can do. And somewhere last night we were talking about somebody brought up Dragon Age, and I'm like, I've seen that game. Wait a minute, I have it on video. And I was asking around, is there gameplay footage? And I've got at least a half an hour of Dragon Age, so I need to track down the tape and rip it and throw it. And, you know, I don't think anybody's going to gripe at me for throwing it up now.
Yeah. You know. The game looks so awesome.
It was actually pretty impressive. I mean, we were looking at a relatively early build, so when you get into the massive tons of people on screen and flame effects and stuff like that, you would start to see, you know, frame drops and it stutter a little bit, obviously.
All right, well, there's nothing like crazy tangents that I don't understand because I've never heard of Dragon Age.
Dragon Age. It's the new game. It looks kind of like an amazing version of Oblivion, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, it's you're a big fan of Oblivion. All right. Well, what I was saying before was that, well, I don't know if we want. Do we want to go on the same topic I was covering?
I don't know. What are we talking about?
Let's just go off on a tangent. That's
I was
nice.
Talking about
adult film.
EA. Yeah. I was talking about EA and how they used to be evil and they're getting better. And Activision.
Oh, yeah.
I really like that article. Maybe it just made Kotick shine. The thing that everyone focused on in the article was how Forbes said that Rock Band was a ripoff of Guitar Hero.
It's fantastic.
The same people made the game.
It's not a ripoff.
Made both
exactly.
of them.
It was,
anyway.
I'd love to see that in the press.
I hate it when people say that. They're like, God, they ripped them off. It's like the same exact people. Just Activision has it now. And, yeah. You know, MTV, EA owns it.
Listen, Ron, it is the end of the show, so we got to go. I appreciate you coming on with us. Thank you very much.
I love you.
Thank you, Ron.
I love you too, Ron. Everybody, one last thing. Go to golgotron.com/forums. Those are going to be the new Chatterbox forums right now. We're starting a new project, but that's all we've got right now, the forums.
Say the name again.
golgotron.com/forums. We'll get a link up on our website.
What now?
golgotron.com/forums. I'll have a link up on our chatterboxgameshow.com website eventually, and as the weeks go by, we'll tell you more about this project that is coming to fruition. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back next week.
Good night, guys.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.